and miracles says that we should be remembering that we are entitled to miracles. We are entitled to states of completion and abundance. We are entitled to healing. We are entitled to love. It's not something you have to pay for. It's not something you have to earn. Real love, real appreciation, real recognition is a gift. It's something that you receive just because of who you are and what created you. We're going to another level, a level of gifting and discovery. A level of gifting and discovery and reawakening and knowing that peace and abundance and freedom and joy and happiness, that's our natural state. That should be our natural state. We just need to change our perception, change our interpretations, and we will see it and experience it totally differently.
I'm out of time and all I got is 4 minutes. We're going to talk about, we're going to be on in the teacher's manual on page 26. I got some extra books up here for those who want to follow along. It's on page 26 in the teacher's manual, which is toward the back of the book. And this section tonight is going to cover the area that's about a change is required in your life situation. A change is required in your life situation. And a God's teacher, the Course would say, is a love demonstrator. God is love, teachers are demonstrators. So we're supposed to be love demonstrators. We're supposed to be freedom demonstrators. And happiness demonstrators. How good are you doing at your function? Okay. So our change is required in your life situation. It's, of course, says changes are required in the minds of God's teachers. And so this may or may not involve changes in the external situation. So remember that no one is where they are by accident, and chance plays no part in God's plan. So whatever's going on in your life right now, you're not there by accident. Whatever relationship you're in right now, you're not in that relationship by accident. Whatever your situation that you're dealing with right now, it's not an accident. Chance doesn't play any part in the plan. Chance doesn't play. No, there are no accidents according to the Course. Nothing that's happened to you has been an accident. Nothing that's happened to us has happened by chance. It says it's most unlikely that changes in attitude wouldn't be the first step in the newly made teachers of God training. So in this brand new training that we're getting, the first change that needs to happen is the change of attitude, right? And there is, however, no set pattern. So that means the training is always highly individualized. So each one of us, we're having our own individual personal training by spirit. So there are basically two kinds. There are some people that are going to be called upon to change their life situation almost immediately. That when you really get ready to go to your real joy and real peace and real happiness, some people are required in order to get there to change their situation immediately. But those are generally special cases. So it's very rare that when you say you really want to have happiness and really want to have peace, that you got to turn your life upside down in order to do it. The Course is saying those are usually special cases, because if it's true that the main thing that needs to change is my mind, then I can do that without necessarily having to turn my life upside down if I really wanted to. Not only that, I need to realize that if where I am is not an accident, then that means that where I am has something to do with the divine plan of my life. And that means that it's not to my disadvantage, actually. And if I do feel like I need to make some radical shift in my life situation, that that's a special case, your special case. And that my training is highly individualized, so that means that my path may not be like anybody else's path in this room in terms of the acting out of the path. So when I'm receiving my training to go to my joy, it may call for me to follow my own individual path and not what everybody else is trying to do. And one of the most common things in the world is that people are trying to act out this script that society has given us about what is supposed to make you happy. You know, so you find that most people are just like sheep. They're just following whatever they've been told without questioning any of it. And those of us who do question, then we're sometimes ridiculed and seen as being the weird ones. And those of you who have marched to the beat of a different drama and you didn't necessarily feel like what you were learning was true, we often didn't have anywhere to turn. And so fortunately, we have each other for a short period of time each week, which I think is great. I think it's great that I get a chance with you to you know, it's amazing how people can, so many people can follow a direction that makes no one happy.
Yeah.
When you really just think about it, just from a logical point of view, you would think if millions of people were following the same ideas of what happiness were, you'd think that there'd be so many people that would be happy that would be convincing to everybody else that they should go that way. But it's interesting when you see how many people that are following what's supposed to make us all happy, yet when you look at your friends and your relatives and people that you know, how unhappy they are about one thing or another, and they're basically trying to follow the plan. So it just seems weird that more people aren't rebelling against what we've been taught. But what's the rebellion? The rebellion is changing my mind, realizing I got my own individual path, knowing that where I am is not an accident. And if I do want to make a radical shift, that's a pretty special case. He says, by far the majority are given a slowly evolving training program. That sounds like my path. It seems like most of the people I know are on a slowly evolving training program. I don't exactly see enlightenment happening overnight with most of the people I know. So if you feel like you're moving slow toward going toward peace and love in your life, that's actually what the majority of us do. We do a slowly evolving training program in which as many previous mistakes as possible are corrected. And he says, relationships in particular must be properly perceived. So the main thing that we want to do if we want to move forward is to perceive our relationships correctly. And how do you do that? He says, well, all dark cornerstones of unforgiveness must be removed. So if I'm going to actually properly perceive my relationship, I've got to let go of my distorted perceptions of whoever I'm in relationship with so that I can have a cool relationship with them. Because what's making me unhappy in that relationship more than anything else is the distorted beliefs and concepts and ideas that I'm projecting on that person. Because projection makes perception is one of the basic rules that's taught in the course, which we know we don't have to believe, we don't have to accept. So I'm just sharing information. If you want to, whatever you want to accept, it's okay. Whatever you don't want to accept is okay. It says you don't have to believe it, accept it, welcome it. Some of it's going to be hard to believe. Some of it's going to be startling. But if you use it, you will see that it works. So it's okay. It's like we can take all that. I can take the pressure off myself to think I'm trying to convince you of anything. You can take the pressure off yourself if you think I'm trying to convince you of anything. Because I've learned that the best way for anyone to be in your life is through their own free will and of their own willingness. You don't want anybody around you that feels coerced, forced. They don't want to be there. That's why I try to position myself on this side of the room and the door on that side of the room so that people always feel like, you know, they're free to come and go as they please. Because it's amazing how much easier your life goes when you're surrounded by people that you appreciate. It's just amazing. It's not really complicated, you know. What I found out is happiness is a decision. I used to think it was after I attained something. And then the course taught me, no, it's a decision. You'll be, like, if you're in a relationship and you want to have peace in that relationship, all you have to do is decide with the other person that y'all both want to have peace in the relationship, and the peace between you is more important than the tag between you, and you'll have peace in your relationship. It's not really complicated. If you appreciate the person and recognize them and acknowledge them and support them, you're not going to have a bad relationship. Relationships don't have to be complicated. It's just when that tyrant takes over and a person believes that the purpose of the other person is to make them happy, and then they come up with their own way of how the person should make them happy, and then guilt trip the person if they don't do it. That's where all the hell comes from that people go through in relationships. Hell, if you don't like me, just go. You know, if I'm that bad, you know, just go. I mean, you know, And if there's something you appreciate about me, and I appreciate about you, let's build on that. Because there are no lack of beings that you can have loving relationships with. There's a lot of them. It's a lot of them. But the main thing to recognize is that if I'm having a problem, there's some dark cornerstone of unforgiveness. There's some misperception that I have that's going on that needs to be shifted. Otherwise, the old thought system will have a basis to return. As long as I believe that what's happening to me is being caused by something outside of myself, then the old victim thought system can come back. It can. So that's the first paragraph. Any questions or comments about that one before I go to the next one?
I have a comment.
Yeah.
I discovered what special case means, because I'm one of the special cases. It's sort of like special ed at school. It's for those of us that are extra selfish, self-centered, self-absorbed, arrogant, controlling. Stubborn. Those are special cases. We go from penthouses to basements, coastlines to mountains, and get dragged all over the place.
Yeah.
And it has been a slowly evolving program.
Yes.
But it's funny that this is coming up today, because I was gonna mention I'm on lesson 359.
Uh-huh.
Almost done.
Oh, okay. You're almost to the end.
Slowly, 2.5 years.
Yeah. So when I hear slowly evolving training program, it's like it takes the pressure off me. I don't have to feel like I'm an underachiever if it's been taking a while. So actually, also I don't have to feel guilty about following my own heart and following my own path, because it's a highly individualized training program. I like the idea that if I could change my mind, that would change my life situation. That's a lot easier than the old way, which is trying to manipulate everything around me so that it finally brings me joy. One of the things that happens when you manifest a lot of stuff that you think you want to manifest, whether that's prestige, whether that's money, whether that's position or whatever it is, it's amazing when you achieve that and you realize that in and of itself won't make you happy, but no one can convince you of that until you actually do it, because you're convinced that it's different for you than it is for everybody else. So even if everybody else has told you that's true, then, you know, like I've heard Oprah say, she's, you know, it's like, it's funny, people think that because of what I've achieved that I don't have the same kind of stuff that'll come up for me like comes up for anybody else. Because most people tell themselves if they have plenty of money and plenty of fame, then they're going to be all right. You know, and because people don't realize happiness is internal and not external. And it's what you're telling yourself that's making you happy, not the situation. So if you don't like yourself or you have fear or insecurity, then you just project that on whatever you manifested around yourself. That's all. You just be miserable in a nicer place, you know, or whatever, you know. Or you could be blissfully happy in a nicer place, you know. But it's going to be an internal job, and that's why it's slowly evolving, because it usually takes people a long time to realize that they're doing it to themselves.
Or one more comment on this piece, too?
Yeah.
It says in the book, the sole responsibility of the miracle worker is to accept the atonement for himself.
Yeah.
And I've noticed that when I really got this, that mine is an individual curriculum.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no chance.
No.
Everyone who's with me needs to be with me, and there's no one missing who doesn't need to be there.
Right.
Once I got that, and it is a slowly evolving program for myself,
yeah,
it's just another way of saying I don't need to judge myself or anything. And as soon as I accepted that for me, I immediately took the pressure off of anybody else's program that I was watching outside.
Right. That's a trip, how true that is. But that's and then atonement just means the correction of error. The Course has its own definitions for all its terms. And so when it says atonement, it's saying you need to accept the truth for yourself. You need to accept. In other words, if you're hearing this, it would be very powerful if you heard this, if you just applied it to yourself and then really worry about whether or not you can convince anybody else of the truth of it. I'm not where I am by accident. I have an individual plan. My happiness comes from within. If I'm really going to change my life, I got to change the way I relate to those around me. And that'll change everything. Everything. Another thing is that life is really supposed to be easy and flowing and harmonious. I know it's almost a bad word to say to people, but I'm going to have the nerve enough and the guts to tell you that your life should be a flow, it should be harmonious, it should be safe, it should be easy,
yes,
it should be joyful. Your relationship shouldn't always be processing your butt off all day and all night. explaining your job shouldn't be one when you get up in the morning, you're ready to shoot yourself in the head, your alarm go off, you know. All those things are little things to let you know you're not being yourself. You're not being authentic. You're not being truly yourself. Because as soon as you get in touch with who you really are, then who you really are will create circumstances that will support you and that will bring joy to you. Just who you are, just your being, your own personal vibration, your energy. Unless you're trying to act out the script that you're hearing in TV, on radios, and newspapers about how you should look, how you should dress, how you should be, what's really valuable, what's really not, and then judging your value by that. That's not saying you can't enjoy all those things, but the minute you think that's you, the minute you think that your value is somehow connected to that, then you're slipping off into the slowly evolving training program. And that's all right. That's cool. That's all right, especially in Denver. There's a lot of nice mountains around, and a lot of live music. You can slowly evolve at a nightclub tomorrow night, or you can slowly evolve up in the mountains, you know, and you can slowly evolve at a party. You know what I'm saying? It's like, it's okay. You can enjoy your slow evolvement. It's not about guilt. It's about being patient with yourself, because you can't lose. You can't lose. You can't lose. You can't. So don't let your ego busy yourself up to the point you don't have time to breathe. Don't let your ego busy your life up to the point that you never have any time just to cool out. Do not mistake busyness for ambition, and busyness for happiness, and busyness, you know what I'm saying? Because the Course says that a person that doesn't give themselves any time to just be with themselves, they're trying to avoid their own thoughts. Mm-hmm. They're trying to keep from dealing with what's really going on inside themselves, because if they were still for 5 minutes, they would hear what they really think, what they really feel, and what's really going on. So people keep themselves really, really busy so that they don't have to do any introspection, any true introspection. Okay, those are all the little tips. Because it's through that introspection of getting in touch with who you really are that you get in touch with the power and the guidance that puts you in the positions that bring you joy that you want. So introspection is a good thing. Having a minute to just cool out is a good thing. As a matter of fact, it allows spirit to come through and do some things for you, which is good. I think that'd be great to have some things done for me through me. What about you? Is that am I cursing you out? Is everything cool? Is that good news? Okay. Now, then the Course goes on. As the teacher of God advances in his training, you learn one lesson with increasing thoroughness, that you don't make your own decisions. What does that mean? The more advanced you become in consciousness, the more you recognize you ask your inner teacher for the answer, Holy Spirit, God, whatever you want to call it, and then you follow your inner guidance as the guide for action. So the more you wake up, the more you're following guidance. The more asleep you are, the more you're making up what you think you should do. And then doing the trial and error method. You're not bad. You're not guilty. It's just not the easiest way to live a peaceful life. That's all. Then it says, this becomes easier and easier as you learn to give up your own judgment. Okay, it becomes easier to learn to give up my own judgment. He says, the giving up of judgment, the obvious prerequisite for hearing your inner voice or God's voice, is usually a fairly slow process. So not only is our evolving program pretty slow, letting go of judgment is pretty slow too. Right? I've been hearing that all my life. You shouldn't judge. But everybody I know do it, and so do I. Right? So the Course says that's something else that we slowly give up. He says, not because it's hard. It's not, giving up judgment isn't hard. He says, it's because it's apt to be perceived as personally insulting. Like, probably some of you felt that. Like, what do you mean give up my judgment? See, I know what's best for me. What do you mean? This must be a cult. You can't take over my mind. Yeah. It's like, there is absolutely no advantage of trying to, like, manipulate yourself, which is that's all you'd be doing if you tried to manipulate somebody else. Then you increase manipulation in your own consciousness, right? And then your consciousness creates your reality, so you just end up being surrounded by a bunch of manipulators just like you. Yeah. So it's no payoff in doing it. You know, and there'll be better manipulators than you are. Because to receive back the manipulation I give, I need a better manipulator, or they wouldn't be able to pull it off. Yeah. So if I'm going to reap what I've sown, then whoever comes to give me what I've given would have to be as astute at manipulating me as I thought I was at manipulating somebody. So it's not like you're going to recognize the manipulator. your ego say, well, I just recognized the manipulator as soon as they showed up. Now, if they're a true manipulator, like you've been trying to be a true manipulator, then they would be able to fool you the way you look like you fooled whoever you were manipulating. So you wouldn't even know you were manipulated either. Yeah, I know. This giving and receiving is the same, and drawing to you what you are. It sucks, doesn't it? Because don't we want to be able to do it to somebody else without it being done to us? Of course we do. That's what else is the advantage of separation? Is I can experience something that you don't experience. Why else, you know? Yeah, but I'm not talking about you all. I know you all would never manipulate anything or anybody in your realities at all. Would you?
No.
No, never.
Well,
I would never do it. I would never manipulate anybody. Make sure you hold your nose now. So I would never manipulate nobody. I wouldn't do it in a million years. So the course says the world's training is directed toward achieving a goal in direct opposition to our curriculum. The world's training is directed toward achieving a goal in direct opposition to our curriculum. What does that mean? Whenever you hear something in the course, you just go, what does that mean? And the next sentence will tell you. What does that mean? Well, it means the world trains for reliance on one's judgment as the criterion for maturity and strength. So the world's training is you just figure it all out on your own, and the better you can figure it out on your own, even though you don't really know the full picture and don't really know what's going on, then the more astute you are. So as we become adults, we become sometimes very fixed in our way of seeing things, but the course says the reason why we do that is so that we think maturity means I can figure it all out on my own, and so I want to believe my way of looking at things is correct, and to open myself up to anybody else's point of view or to any kind of truth would be a threat to my entire thought system and to my entire life. See, I got to figure it out this way as an adult. And if you're giving me something totally new, then I'd have to kind of, in a sense, let go of my hold on my rigid view of what the world and what life is that I've learned to manipulate in and around it. So even if it's making me miserable, at least I know my way around my misery. And so I'll stay in it simply because I think I know what it's all about. But when you present a whole new thought system to me, another way of being, then I'd have to let go of a lot of my identity that's tied into the what I believe is true. So most people would rather go with the old that they're familiar with, even if it doesn't make them happy, than to deal with the mystery, the unknown, which is really where all the excitement is located, as long as you're safe. Mm-hmm. You know, so that's, yeah. Mm-hmm. Like what?
Like the last lecture.
Exactly. And it may be this one, too. If people can be sufficiently made fearful enough, they always go for the limitation. They always go for what they know, even if it's not making them happy. If you can scare a person enough, they won't move out of their position. So it's going to be interesting to see how much fear is injected in this whole thing, because it's just the easiest way to manipulate people. You know, I just make you so afraid that, you know, if you'd be too afraid to make a change, you'd be too afraid to do anything differently, you know. So we always get a chance to see where we're coming from, you know. And it doesn't matter who's elected anyway, because your happiness is still going to be internal.
That's right.
I don't care who's in the White House. If you don't like yourself, you're going to be miserable. Okay, that don't make any difference, even though it can be symbolic of an idea where mass consciousness is coming from, which I am a part of, you know. So I get a chance to learn a lot about my own subconscious mind, which is great. So what makes the course opposite from the world's training simply means that the world is training us to rely on our own judgment, while the course, on the other hand, is telling you the relinquishment of judgment is the necessary condition for being happy. What they mean by that is the relinquishment of just listening to your own judgment without getting in touch with the Holy Spirit or higher power or divine consciousness. That's what it means. It's not like saying that you just give up your sense of any kind of evaluation of your experience. It just means you're going to a higher level of judgment, a judgment that's beyond what we know. Because it's not really difficult. If it's the truth, we can always prove it right now, pretty much, because it's what is. Like, basically, what this next section that I'm going into is going to talk about how judgment is relinquished. And it's so cool because it really runs down why you have to relinquish it. And I'm going to go to it right now. It says, how is judgment relinquished? Okay, so if I need to give up my judgment in order to let the judgment of the divine come in so that I can really have a change in my life situation that brings me joy, how do I do that? And it's a good question. It says, well, judgment, like other devices by which the world of illusions is maintained, judgment is totally misunderstood by the world. Judgment is actually confused with wisdom. Judgment actually substitutes for truth. As the world uses the term, an individual is capable of good or bad judgment, right? And your education is aimed at strengthening the good judgment and minimizing the bad judgment. So everybody's capable of judgment, good and bad judgment. But what I want to do is strengthen the good judgment, and I want to minimize the bad judgment. Is that true?
Yes.
Okay, then it says, there is, however, considerable confusion about what these categories of good and bad judgment mean. What is good judgment to one person is bad judgment to another person. Is that true?
Yeah.
Right? Then it says, further, even the same person classifies the same action as showing good judgment at one time, bad judgment at another. You know what I'm saying? It's good judgment for me to toast with alcohol at a wedding, and then I say it's bad judgment for me to do the same thing at a party later on. It could be the same thing. Like I could be doing the same physical thing sometimes, but I say sometimes it's good to do it, sometimes it's bad to do it. It's good to eat dessert sometimes it's bad to eat. You know, we take the same action. It's good to make love sometimes it's not so cool. It's good to come to the class sometimes it's not. You know, it's like we actually take the same thing and we'll judge it as good or bad. So that's the truth, right? Yeah. He says, nor can any consistent criteria for determining what these categories can be really taught. At any time, the student may disagree with what the would-be teacher says about what's good and bad judgment, and the teacher himself may well be inconsistent in what he believes is good and bad judgment. So good judgment in these terms doesn't mean anything, and no more does bad judgment. He says, we so screwed up it don't make no difference whether we do good, what we call good judgment or bad judgment. We don't really have any kind of consistency with it because we're taking the very same thing and call it good judgment one time and bad judgment another time. So if that's true, then we don't really know what good and bad judgment really is. So of course says, well, it's necessary then for the teacher of love to realize not that you shouldn't judge. It's not that we should realize that we shouldn't judge. The course is saying we should realize that we can't judge. So in giving up judgment, you're really giving up what you did not have in the first place. I didn't have judgment in the first place, really, because I really can't judge. So what you're really doing is giving up the illusion, or better, you're having the illusion of giving up judgment. You're actually just becoming more honest when you stop judging. Recognizing that judgment was always impossible for you, you no longer even attempt it, and so it's no sacrifice. On the contrary, by giving up judgment, you're putting yourself in a position where you can experience judgment through you rather than judgment by you. And this judgment through you is neither good judgment nor bad judgment. It's the only judgment there is, and the only judgment that's really going to come through you when you let go of judgment is that creation is guiltless and sin doesn't exist. When the God Son, of course, says that that's just love creation. That's what we are. And since when we finally see each other correctly, we're going to say two things: that you're totally innocent, and sin doesn't exist. Now that is as opposite to what I was taught as a child as you could possibly hear. Yes. You were guilty and you were sinners.
Yep.
Okay, now let's just take that for a second. We're guilty. We're sinners. Okay. Now, that idea of guilt, of separation, of something being flawed in us, that's the fabric of our society in the Judeo-Christian society. That's the core belief is there's something wrong with us, right? And we were born flawed. Okay, that's everybody pretty much. Whether you didn't grow up Southern Baptist or Catholic, somehow or another, you got guilt was in there. Okay, all right. The original sin is if you could come up with one that's different from what anybody else has done. You know, it's like I'm not. I don't think there is an original sin. I'm still waiting for one. But they seem like everybody's doing the same thing at different times. But So if the society that we live in and the reality that we're experiencing now is based on the ideas that guilt is real and we are somehow flawed and sinful, and thought is creative and our consciousness creates our reality and what we believe is what we see and what we believe we attract to us, and we've been taught that if you're bad, you deserve to be punished, and if you're guilty and sinful, obviously you deserve to be punished, then a conscious creator who creates through his consciousness and his thoughts, which is what we do, would just, from the time they were born, even as a child, create conditions and circumstances that would draw pain and suffering to them, even up to today. So there's so much pain and suffering in society because we believe in guilt and because we believe in sin. That is why we're living in a world of such fear. It's because, okay, in other words, we've already seen the result of believing in guilt and sin. We've seen that world. It's the one we see now. Okay? So the Course is saying common sense would tell you then that to have an opposite world, you'd have to have an opposite belief. Okay? The opposite belief would be you're innocent and there is no sin. Now, try that one on for size and see what happens in your life. And if you think you don't believe that stuff and that's why you're so rebellious, because you don't believe that, then you would feel not any discomfort or weirdness by telling yourself you are not sinful or guilty. And that would be a great idea for us to join on together to try. But if you still have a lot of subconscious belief in that, you will feel somewhat uncomfortable just at the very mention of saying there is no sin, there is no guilt. So how do you feel? And that will get you in touch with what you really believe as opposed to what you might be telling yourself. When I say it, a little part of me goes, Right. So that lets me know I have a hidden belief in guilt and sin, and that hidden belief in guilt and sin is what's creating the pain and suffering that I go through in my life. It's like I'm looking at a movie, but the projection, which is just the way it is in a movie. I'm looking at the movie, but the projector is behind me, hidden. So I'm looking at what the projector is showing me, but what it's showing me is just the effect. I really need to change what's in the projector, right? But I don't even know the projector is there because I'm in denial about my belief in sin movie, my belief in guilt movie. Got it? So the projector's behind me. I'm sitting in the theater. I'm experiencing three dimension, 3D. That's why 3D, they're going to put in like 15,000 theaters over the next year or so, which means we're coming to that point where the dream is becoming as real as the reality, and at some point you can't tell the difference between the two. You know what I'm saying? And then we're gonna get the goggles that we put on, and then we'll actually look like we're in this room, but we'll be sitting in the chair, and you'll be able to have any kind of experience that you want to have. The porn industry is gonna make millions. Without actually moving out of your chair, you'll experience yourself as in a three-dimensional reality just like this. And that's what this is. This is the ultimate holodeck. This is the ultimate 3D projection that we're sitting in right now. And the Course is saying, change the movie and change the way you're looking at the one you have in. Okay? So how do I change the projection that I'm experiencing? I am innocent. There is no sin. I make mistakes. People make mistakes. Mistakes can be corrected. So saying that there is no sin is not saying I don't make mistakes. So it's not the same as saying I don't make mistakes. But the Course says a mistake is more unattractive to us than a sin or a guilt. Mm-hmm. You can feel guilty about something, do it over and 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 over again. You can be told something is a sin and you get turned on to do it even more. I don't know. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, I know exactly what I'm saying. Some of your greatest moments of passion is when you were doing something you felt guilty about. You know it was. That's just straight up. You know that's true. Okay? Sure, one day you'll surely get to the point that if it makes you feel guilty, it won't turn you on at all. You'll flip it. That unless it's loving, unless it's peaceful, unless you really feel good about yourself, about what you're doing, you won't even have any attraction to it. Just like right now, we're attracted to the stuff that we feel guilty about. It's going to flip. So if you call it a mistake, you won't continue to do it. If you call it a sin and guilt, you'll keep on doing it. So if you go, it's a mistake, you won't keep doing it. You know why? Because you've already been trained from the day you were born not to make mistakes. and not to feel good about mistakes. So the minute you make it a mistake, it's a mistake for me to not love myself. It's a mistake for me not to let myself be prosperous and loved and appreciated. It's a mistake for me not to let myself experience all the world has to offer in a beautiful way. It's a mistake for me not to give myself peace. It's a mistake for me to condemn myself. It's a mistake for me to project on you. If I preface that with it's a mistake, my mind is going to automatically want to correct it because my mind has already been trained to correct mistakes. If I call it a sin, I can't help it. I was born in sin. If I call it a guilt, then I'm going to request punishment in order for me to be okay. Mm-hmm. So mistake, you'll stop it, and you won't punish yourself. Or call it a mistake or say it won't work, and you'll stop, the course teaches. You know, it just won't work. For you to continue to condemn yourself just won't work. For you to continue to let yourself experience lack just won't work. You know, in terms of bringing you the joy you want. Again, the man doesn't like to do things that don't work, to continue to do things that don't work. If eating 2 dozen donuts, you know, is not going to help me with my diet, then I can tell myself eating 2 dozen donuts doesn't work. Uh-huh. That eating 2 dozen donuts is a mistake. But if I beat myself up about it, oh, I'm eating another donut. I just will never do good on my diet. Yeah, you're eating it so you can feel the guilt that you feel about eating the donut. It's just like your ego feeds on guilt. The separated, fearful mind feeds on guilt and fear. So it needs you to feel guilty and afraid about stuff. That part of the mind that feeds on fear needs fear and guilt. Got it? So I'll eat the donut for the guilt. It doesn't have anything to do with the donut. Mm-hmm. If I didn't feel guilty, I wouldn't eat the donut. Mm-hmm. Or I wouldn't attack myself for eating the donut. And if I don't attack myself for eating the donut, I won't gain weight because the weight's coming from my guilt and not from the donut. Mm. You know, it's deep, but it's true. It's real deep. So if you're eating something that you feel guilty about, you know you're going to punish yourself for eating it. It may not indeed be a sin at all, but you're going to make it one for you. And so you're going to punish yourself. So if I hate myself and I punish myself, I don't feel good about myself, then I'm going to choose a relationship that makes me feel bad all the time. If I love myself and I believe I deserve acknowledgement and recognition, then I'm going to choose friends and relationships that we acknowledge each other. It's just automatic. It's not complicated. It all starts with what you believe about yourself. That's why he started out with, it's a change of mind that's necessary. And not necessarily to change your life situation, because you can change your life situation, don't change your mind, then you're just going to... I think when you move somewhere, like when I moved here, I realized I had 6 months. That's what I call it. I had about a 6 month window to really believe I was in a new experience. Because it was pretty unfamiliar to me, like new experiences are. So in that frame of mind, it's like an opening where it is easier for you to make a change because you really think you really have made a change because you're in a different place. But those of us who move places, you know that if you don't, within about 6 months or so, you'll find yourself recreating the exact same friends, situations, and circumstances you did in the place you lived at before. Another cool thing about moving to another place is it's temporarily it erases personal history. There are not people around you who have labeled you and think they know what you're about. So in a way, you get a chance to present yourself as the way you see yourself as being right now without having to deal with them remembering when you were something else and always throwing it up in your face. That's why it's hard to make changes around family. That's why most people who make the biggest changes leave family. So that they don't deal with all the programming that the family projects on them about what they were because the family thinks they know them. But actually, I think it's the opposite. I think your family knows you least of all. Mm-hmm. If you just really be honest, they're the ones who actually know you least of all. You know, but they're the ones who think they know you the most. Mm-hmm. And when you're around them, to show you how that past programming is, you'll revert back to that old behavior almost as soon as you come around them. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. As old as I am, I get around my older sisters, I'm still their little brother. Mm-hmm. You know, but your little brother is going to be getting Social Security in a little whack. And I'm still the little brother. You know what I'm saying? We get trapped in those perceptual judgments. Yeah. Right? So there are a lot of easy ways to make a change. So when you make a move, a new job or a new relationship, or you move move out of town or any of that stuff, it's giving you a window where you really get a chance to be more present, where you get a chance to express this new self that you see yourself to be, because the new people that you're about to meet, they don't know you. So the impression you give them at the very beginning is going to be what they think you are. So if you've evolved to a certain personality now and you want to have the freedom to express that new personality without people feeling like it's weird, you continue to allow yourself to meet new people. You let yourself move into different environments. You enlarge your circle of friends and acquaintances because they only know you as you are now. And then the ones who are really tight with you, they will accept your change. The ones who are not, in other words, they need you to fulfill the role you used to fill, they're going to get somebody else to fulfill that role, and then some people are going to make the change with you. So that's what usually happens, because you're really fulfilling a need with the people that are around you. And when you change, you may not be fulfilling that need anymore, and then they just naturally gravitate toward other people who would meet that need, and you wonder why your friends seem to be fading away, or they're not calling you the way they used to. When you're making the shift, you're not fulfilling the need that they have because you're changing. And some of your friends get it and they go, oh, you know, I'm doing the same thing. Some of them you have to just release. You have to go, well, you know what? We've gone as far as we can go on this journey together right now. I wish you the best, but I'm heading in a different direction. That's okay. And then you'll also draw the new people that love you and recognize you the way you are now. That's going to happen. That's what happened. Can you deal with it? Okay, because that's what's going to happen. The weirdest thing happens when you change. Things become different. Okay, so a lot of times people want to change without anything changing.
Yeah.
It's kind of weird. It's like, I want to change, but I want nothing to change. You know, it's going to happen faster and faster and faster because the universe has always been waiting for you to love yourself and want yourself to be loved. So when you want to be happy and healed, you get a lot of help. When you want to be miserable, you have to pretty much do that by yourself with the help of other people who want to be miserable too. So the universe doesn't help your misery. You have to do that on your own. But the minute you go, I want to experience more love, I want to wake up to who I am, I want to know my light, I want to know my power, then you end with the flow of the universe. Now you can get some help. So you're innocent and you're not sinful. You're innocent and you're not sinful. You may have made some mistakes. Mistakes are for correction, loving correction. And the Course says if a mistake is really corrected, what happens is all the effects of the mistake is undone. Which I think is a great, you know, I think that's a good deal. But when you think about it, the effect of the mistake would have to be just the perception that you're having right now that's making you unhappy. That is the effect of the mistake. It's the way I'm seeing things right now that's making me miserable. So then that makes sense to me when he said that the effect of the mistake would be corrected, because he's talking about perception. You know, what is my mistake? The way I'm seeing things. Okay, that's what's making me unhappy, yes. So if that gets corrected, then the effect, which is the way I'm seeing things that's making me unhappy, will be removed. My ego was he talking about the physical effect of the mistake? Well, at some level, that's going to be gone too, because you're going to wake up out of this experience. So even that's going to be gone one day, because you will wake up out of your physical experience one day. You call it death, but it's not death, it's waking up.
Is it good news?
I think so. But you know, I think it's good news, but that's all that matters, is that I think it's good news. So let's go to the next paragraph. He says, so the aim of our curriculum, unlike the goal of the world's learning, is the recognition that judgment in the usual sense is impossible. Judgment in the usual sense is impossible. This isn't an opinion. It's what? A fact. Now, this is why. In order to judge anything rightly, one would have to be fully aware of an inconceivably wide range of things, past, present, and to come. So for me to judge Bunny, I'd have to be totally aware of an inconceivable amount of things about her past, about her present, and about her future. I would have to recognize in advance all the effects of my judgment on Bunny and everything involved in my judgment in any way. I would also have to be certain that there were no distortions in my perception if I'm going to be a good judge. I have to be sure that I'm seeing everything correctly. I have to know everything about her past, present, and future. And I'd have to be sure that there's no error in my perception, and so that my judgment would be totally fair on everybody whom it rests on now and in the future. Now, I'd like to ask you, who's in a position to do this? Who in this room is in a position to know everything about... Okay, you read the Judge Earl. Do you know everything about his past? Do you know everything that's going on in his life right now? Because this is a very small, little infinitesimal part of his life. This is 1 hour class on Thursday night. You have to also know everything that's going to happen to me in for the rest of my life, and you'd have to be sure that you're seeing it correctly. And he says, now who, except in grandiose fantasies, would pretend they had that knowledge? But that's what a judge would have to have in order to be able to judge correctly. Everybody ready to take their robes off? Everybody ready to retire? Okay, then the court says a little bit further. Remember how many times you thought you knew all the facts you needed for judgment and how wrong you were? Is there anyone who hasn't had this experience to think they really know what was going on and being totally wrong? But this is the question I like. But he says, would you know how many times you merely thought you were right without ever realizing you were wrong? Mm-hmm. See, I think I thought I caught a few times I was wrong. Like he was saying, you know, you knew all the facts, but then you found out later on you weren't correct. But he says, but there are many times you're absolutely completely wrong and you never realize it. It's not like you realized every time you made a wrong judgment. That's deep. He says, now, why would you choose such an arbitrary basis for decision making? Wisdom isn't judgment. Wisdom is the relinquishment of judgment. What make then but one more judgment? And this is this. Now, this is the judgment we're supposed to make. I don't care what you're going through right now in your life. There's somebody with you whose judgment is perfect. There's someone with you who does know all the facts, past, present, and to come. There is someone with you who does know all the effects of its judgment on everyone and everything involved in any way. And this part of you, the divine part of you that judges, is totally fair to everyone, for there is no distortion in God's perception. Therefore, lay judgment down, not with regret, but with a sigh of gratitude. Now are you free of a burden so great that you could merely stagger and fall down beneath it. And it was all illusion, nothing more. Now can you, the teacher of God, rise up unburdened and walk lightly on. Yet it is not only this that is your benefit. If you're giving it up, if you're learning how to surrender it to your higher self, your sense of care is gone because you don't have none. You've given your sense of care away along with judgment because you've given yourself to Spirit, God, the higher power, whose judgment you have chosen now to trust instead of your own. Mm-hmm. Now you will make no mistakes. Your guide is sure. And where you came to judge, you come to bless. Now that's deep because I'm experiencing that in my own experience right now. It's like it's weird how go to a social event or go to some occasion and consciously stop before I go in or when I go in and say, I send light and joy and peace and I want to bless everybody in here and I want everybody to know that they're innocent. I notice if I do that at the very beginning, then I'll have an incredible experience of the people that I'm getting ready to connect with. People will come up and speak to me. They'll be very loving. We'll have a great time. And I just realized in that moment what he was saying. I used to come to judge. What's going on? Looking at that person over there, and is this one nice over here? And what that person, you know what I'm saying? I used to come to judge. Now I come to bless. For real. So he says, now I'm laughing. Where I used to cry. It's the boringest thing. I'm going to kill myself if I don't get out of this place. Now it's like, whoa, this is cool. Anybody else having it? Okay, I just want to check in. Everybody's looking at me like, it's okay, it'll happen. It's going to happen, I guarantee, as you give up your own judgment. As you say, Holy Spirit, decide for me. As you realize you can't judge, that you're not really doing something unreasonable. You really don't know anything about the people around you enough to really be able to truly judge them. It's not like he's asking us to do something that we really do really well, but we're being asked to stop. Right? So he says, it's not difficult to relinquish judgment. It's not difficult to relinquish judgment, but it is difficult to try to keep it. You're going through your difficulties because you're keeping on judging. He says, but it's not difficult to relinquish it. Once you see what it's doing to you, then you let it go. You know what I'm saying? The ones I understand that if I hold a porcupine, you know what I'm saying, that it's going to really hurt. Nobody has to force me not to grab that joker by the tail. You know, it's no pressure when I see that it's not going to help me, that it's not going to allow me to accomplish my goal and have what I want, and I clearly see that, then there's no strain to give up something that you know doesn't work to once you clearly see it doesn't work. So he says, now you're going to lay it down. You're going to lay judgment down. He says, when? The instant you recognize what it's costing you. So if you want to let go of something, all you have to recognize is what it's costing you, and you'll let it go. Like what people are doing with big SUVs at $4 a dollar. They say on the news that SUV sales are tanking. You know, because now it's costing people $80 to fill the tank up every 3 days. So that's like, in a sense, that's like a metaphor. The once they realize how much it cost them, then it's not that hard to relinquish the SUV. Okay? The once you see how much believing that you're guilty and that you're separate and that you don't deserve love for some reason, it's costing you. He says, then you let go of all that judgment that's creating that problem. And he says, all of the ugliness you see around you is the outcome of judgment. All the pain you look upon is the result of judgment. All of the loneliness, sense of loss, of passing time, growing hopelessness, sickening despair, the fear of death, all that comes of judgment. He says, now you know that these things need not be. Not one is truth, because what? You've given up the cause of it. And they, which never were but the effects of your mistaken choice, have fallen from you. So let me get this straight. If I let go of what I really don't have the ability to do no way, then I would lose the pain, lose the loneliness, lose the loss, lose the sense of passing time, lose the hopelessness, lose the sickening despair. I would lose my fear of death just by letting go of something I really can't do anyway. Okay, that sounds like a good deal. He says, teacher of God, this step, releasing your judgment, learning the judgment of truth, will bring you peace. Can it be difficult to want just some peace? Mm-hmm. And let me just find the course's definition of peace. It's not sitting around in a cave contemplating your navel. Peace isn't necessarily sitting somewhere quiet. Peace is complete fulfillment. He defines peace as complete fulfillment. I love that definition. Yeah. If I feel totally fulfilled, that is peace. Mm-hmm. So I can have peace on the dance floor, peace sitting at the top of a mountain. I could have peace sitting in the traffic light. I could feel total fulfillment all the time. So I love the idea of peace being total fulfillment. And that's what would happen the minute we let go of what we don't have the power to do anyway, because we really don't know everything about everybody enough to judge them. So this is a good deal. Yeah. Let go of what I really don't have the power to do anyway, and everything I want will be given me. All right. I will. I want no mistakes to the universe. I admit it. I will. I'm willing. Yeah.
I'm in on that.
Are you in on that too? You in with me, brother? You with? Okay, so that means we've got to learn how to let go of judgment, right? Know it's going to be a slowly evolving program, and to know that it's just a mistake to do it, and we're not bad, and not to condemn ourselves when we still make that error. Now, the easiest way to do it that I've found is the Course says use the Holy Spirit's judgment. If you're going to judge, and you feel like you got to judge, and if you don't judge, you're going to pop. Okay, because we're so used to it, right? Then do this. Judge it as love or call for love. Love or call for God. And that's what I say. Like when I found somebody that set the Rocky Mountain Miracle Center on fire a couple of days ago, a guy came up to me today in a restaurant and he recognized me. He said, I wanted to know how the Course in Miracles teachers thought about it when they first looked at that. You know, did you get mad? You know, how did you respond to that? And I said, quite honestly, I didn't get mad. I was just surprised. And the first thing that came to my mind was, I said, man, that's just a big call for God. And I realize I don't think about it now. That's just my standard reply to stuff that's happening. And what I've noticed in doing that is that those type of events in my own personal experience happen less and less and less and less and less and less. Because if I call it a call for God, I'm saying God. If I call it a call for help, I'm saying help. If I call it a call for love, I'm saying love. That's the core, right? So I'm saying love, God, help about even the horrible stuff. And I'm saying love, God, help about the good stuff. Because the good stuff is God, is love. love and I'm being helped. If the crazy stuff is a call for God, a call for love, a call for help. So all I'm hearing all day is help, love, God. God, love, help. Help, help, God, God. Love, love, love. God, God, love. So in my reality, if that's what you're putting out there, then that's what you start to draw back to you. So everything that's happening in the world is just giving you another opportunity to reinforce that idea. And the stronger you make an idea, the faster it manifests and the more powerfully it manifests, because you have to share an idea in order for it to be strong. That's how you make an idea strong. So the idea that we're innocent has to be shared, just like the idea that we're guilty was shared to everybody that believed it, to the point that it made a whole religion. That just came from sharing an idea that people accepted. We're sitting here wanting to have a blissful life based on innocence, but unless we share that idea with each other, it won't grow. So we have to be enthusiastic about these ideas that we say we want to live and believe, because if we don't share them, we don't perceive them. So we come together, we have an opportunity to share these ideas with each other in an environment where we're safe to do it. But sometimes we feel bashful, and sometimes we feel shy, or sometimes we're just analyzing it, or sometimes we're just thinking about how it relates to our own personal little story, and then we miss the opportunity to join together on the idea, sharing the idea, remembering the idea. You're guiltless. Sin doesn't exist. Thank you. That's it. So I just heard that, right? So that increased it in my mind. See, regardless of how anybody in here walk out, and I hope you do benefit from what I've said, but just think, for an hour, I said that to myself. You see what I mean? So I increased it within my consciousness by sharing it with you, and you increase it in your consciousness by thinking it and sharing it with others, and then that manifests in your life. That's the way it works. So I'm going to do the love offering. We'll share the idea of some prosperity and abundance. Is there anybody in here that hasn't signed the contact list that would like to sign the contact list? All right. So that you can know about workshops and seminars and anything else that's coming up that might be of interest that I'm doing. I need to have you on here.
Yeah. It's just you, very calm.
Agreed. Like when someone's saying something that you know that you don't want to put energy into, you don't have to tell them you disagree. Because in most cases, when you tell a person that you disagree, especially if it's not, it doesn't make any difference anyway, because it's not really right. Having any direct effect on you. So you got to make something
yeah,
real.
Exactly.
You know what I'm saying?
Like,
you know, it's like
keep your mouth shut.
Yeah. So what happens is when you don't join the idea, you don't strengthen the idea.
Yeah.
And
right.
if you disagree, and it doesn't really matter no way. It's just
right.
People talking. What you do is you focus more attention on the very thing you don't want to strengthen, because they're going to become busy defending their point of view, where they would have just said it and then y'all could have went on to something else. You stopped it and you made it big by your need to be right and to let them know that they were wrong. But there are very few people that ever change their deepest beliefs because of a conversation with another person. I'm glad to break that to you. It's very rare that if a person really is on their position, that you're going to say anything that's going to really make them change their position. So all you're really doing is making it bigger. Mm-hmm. Where you could go, well, let's just go in another direction here. You know. So just these are little tips that I like to share that makes it easier to move toward your joy. Because spirit knows who needs you the way you are. Spirit knows who needs you in the way you think. And spirit will send you those people who won't be disagreeing. They'll just maybe want to know more and have more clarification. But they're not there to fight what you're trying to say. You know, that's why I don't accept invitations to speak at like a Baptist church. Okay. But if I did, I'd know exactly, I'd be a hit. Because I would just focus on the things that we're in agreement on and put that love out about that. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You focus on where you can join, not on where you separate. Now, people who believe in separation don't like that. I've had relationships with people where I've tried to do that and they got upset. And they would say stuff like, I think there's a great benefit in us having our different points of view and having to work through our different points of view. And I said that it can absolutely be beneficial. And I hope that you find someone that you can do that with. You know, because it's like the thing, I've been there, done that.
Yeah, right.
You know what I'm saying? I've been there, done that with the boop, 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 the boop. You know, it's like, cool, I did that. It's not fun. Then I've had the opportunity of being with people who share my purpose and the love and the joy. And you still get a chance to talk about your particular point of view, but you all have the same purpose. So your differences harmonize. The Course said that's the way you get differences to harmonize. All you do is you take a divergent group of things, whether it's beliefs or feelings or attitudes, and you give it all the same purpose. And he says it completely harmonizes all of them. So you can have a totally different personality from me. But I guess it's just like a football game or something. Everybody's got their different position, but it's all about winning the game. You see what I mean? That's where we are. We all got our different positions, but we want to do the joy game, the abundance game, the peace game. So we take all our various personalities and thoughts and attitudes, and then we all share them with each other for the goal of our own awakening. Then we have joy in our divergency. So you get a chance to be individual, but you get a chance to still move forward. Good deal. Good deal. So we're going to go out into the lab, and I'll be back for emergency help on Sunday at 1 o'clock.
We'll
yeah, you're good. Come on back. I remind you. You sure I'm innocent? You sure? You don't know what I did last night. Well, one thing I can tell you, innocent, and it was a mistake, obviously. How do you know it's a mistake? You want to kill yourself. It's a surefire sign you didn't do the right thing, you know. So I want you to do the stuff you love with the people who love to do it with you as much as you possibly can, to the greatest limit of your ability and capacity to have joy. That's your assignment. And if you forget you deserve that, I'll remind you that you do. That's your natural state.
Thank you.
Is that cool? All right. Okay. I'll see you the next time. God, teachers of God, I'm telling you, you're off the hook. I'm telling you, and you're all cute. So at the very least, just be quiet, and you'll be.
Just be quiet.
Just be quiet. You'll be all right.